Hartford, Connecticut, and Reed Murphy is with me on August the 4th, 1999. And Reed began a camp in 1929. And Reed, I'd appreciate very much if you would just kind of tell us a little bit about how you first heard about the camp and who were in your lodge and a little bit more about how you continued your association with Kiwanee.
Well, I hope I won't ramble too much, but we lived in Englewood, and Ray Frank, who was associated with the boys program at the Presbyterian Church and some of the Boy Scout troops there, knew my brother primarily, who was 4 years older than I was, and in 1929 I was nine. They were very nice to us over there, although we were Roman Catholics. But my brother had a serious problem with asthma, and the doctor said he's got to get up to Maine where he can get away from the things that generated it. So he started in Kiwanee in 1926, and he went there for 11 years straight.
Boy, that's terrific.
I don't know what lodge he was in first. I think the Pine Tree, but he went up till he was several years as a senior counselor and ran the dramatics department. But by the time I was nine, my family thought it would be a good idea if I went to Kiwanee, and so I did. And my family didn't go away in those days because my father was in the bathing suit business.
Ah.
I was in the Falcon Lodge with Van Eeks as my counselor. Now, do you want the people I can remember?
Yeah, that's great. You know, anyone that you might remember.
A fellow named Bart Benedict, Ralph Hurd, H-I-R-D.
I think I ran across him.
Yeah, and he and Doug went to Kiwanee for some years. Bill Hart, Dick Rising, a fellow named Foster, can't think of his last name, Malcolm Forbes.
Oh, yes, Malcolm Forbes.
And I think that pretty well exhausts my recollection.
Oh, that's terrific.
Bill Bloodgood.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
And he stayed in my lodge as we went along. He was killed in the war. He was a bomber pilot. The next year, I was in the Polecat Lodge. Again, counselor was Eeks. The cast of characters was pretty much the same. There was a fellow named Bill Imbrie from Newburgh, New York. Hart, Benedict. The fellow's name was Foster Richardson. I don't know whether he was in the Polecat Lodge or not. Bloodgood was, I'm quite sure. And I can't remember beyond that. Nor do I remember who the... I mean, if I looked at the pictures...
They used to take those postcards.
If I saw that, I'd tell you all of them. Cook was one of them.
Okay.
Norman Cook.
I think you're doing great.
As I say, if I had those old photographs, which I used to have around, but they're gone and they're not in that album.
What were some of your favorite activities? Now, you said you didn't quite jump into everything that camp had to offer, but what did you enjoy doing besides...
Maybe it would be better if I jumped my next year to tell you what happened in my... third year at Kiwanee, when I was in the Beaver Lodge.
Okay.
And that I can tell you about every camper in there because I have a picture of them. But I had skipped 31 and 32. That was a problem of the Depression. And went back in 33, had Eeks again as a counselor. And if you want to shut it off for a minute, I'll run off the list from that picture.
Okay, let's do that then.
Harry Adrians.
We're in the Beaver Lodge. 1933.
Right? Bill Bloodgood. Ed Lupfer. Ed Bright. Skyler Van Engen. Al Brady. And then for a half a year, Bill Kerr. He had been there before, but I don't know why he was only there for half a year. That was the whole lodge. And junior counselor was a fellow named Gardner, and that was the only one of my junior counselors I remember. And Van Eeks, as I said.
Was back as your senior. Well, that's interesting.
I probably was at my most exemplary in that year. Uh-huh. I didn't finish anything except junior life saving. I did do that. I uh-huh. didn't even swim the, well, I did swim the lake. Yeah, that's all right. I was big on boating. Uh-huh. Did not like athletics, but was fairly good at them. Uh-huh. I get a lot of points in track meets and swimming meets, but I hated them.
Uh-huh.
And resisted them. Nature, I hated.
Uh-huh.
Archery, I hated. Eeks taught archery.
Uh-huh.
And I never completed my requirements for an emblem.
Uh-huh.
You had to get to do these
so
various things, like
activities,
like
right.
the levels.
They call them plaques later
yeah.
on.
Well, and they had a card, and you checked them off.
Uh-huh.
If you had any system in your system, you could get it done quite easily.
Mm-hmm.
Not me.
I think Chief Marshall was part of the instigator of that whole program.
Well, I don't know who did that.
Yeah, all right.
But curiously enough, I wound up as the high point winner of the camp.
How'd you manage
well,
that?
Well, I don't know. I did a little of everything. And I think I was about as surprised as anybody in the room at the banquet when they announced it. In fact, I'm not even sure I heard it. That gives you an idea of how aimless my life was in those days. But boating was a big activity with me, and I learned to sail that summer. Yeah, okay. Of course, you had to have swum the lake to do that, and Mac Henney taught me to. You didn't mention Mac Henney in there.
No. I'll have to look at his...
Well, he was a great friend of... the guy who did the motorboating, Louis Benua.
Uh-huh.
He taught me to sail.
Uh-huh.
And that was a big activity for me in 33 and 34. And that's what I did as a master camper in 36.
You don't remember where Mac Henney came from? Was he
he was from
boy? Oh, he was from
Ohio? Yeah.
Okay.
I remember this because his father, I think it was the editor of the law reports in Ohio.
Isn't
so
it?
You'll see... from Ohio, 38 Ohio law reports, and then no name, Henney.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But I spent a lot of time on the water.
Uh-huh.
I remember one thing in particular, because there was something in the Down East magazine about 3 months ago uh-huh. about the town of Flagstaff,
yeah. uh-huh.
which is buried under, or inundated under Lake Wyman Lake, or Flagstaff Lake, behind the Wyman Dam up there in northern Maine.
Hmm.
And Raymond Frank took me and a fellow named Al Livingston,
mm-hmm.
I guess it was 34, and Ralph Hurd up one day to go fishing on some of the rivers up there, and we wound up fishing for pickerel in that lake. And this character named Cliff Wing, who's mentioned in that article, took us out in his boat,
mm-hmm.
and we had quite a time with it. And Raymond did things like that.
He liked to take people on trips.
Yeah. And this would be kind of spontaneous.
Uh-huh.
I also went to Tim Pond in 33
uh-huh.
to trout fish. Didn't do much mountain climbing until I was a counselor.
Okay.
And I did a lot of it.
Yeah, didn't, was Chief Marshall interested in mountain climbing? Did he take you to Katahdin or?
I don't remember. I didn't go. The Katahdin trips cost money, and I didn't.
Uh-huh.
I never went to Katahdin until 1940.
Uh-huh.
But I don't remember what Chief Marshall did in the way of activities. I remember him well,
because uh-huh.
he was the chief and a wonderful guy. And he had a son there named Rafe.
Yes, I have interviewed him.
Who was about as unlike the chief as anybody you can imagine.
Uh-huh.
Talked out of the side of his mouth.
Uh-huh.
Ran the range.
Uh-huh. Got flipped by a horse, I understand, and never came back.
Yeah,
after
he
that.
And a fellow named Les Arps, I think, ran the riding. They had stables up there. Just,
no, that's
just
hard to believe. They were gone when
Yeah, they were just beyond where the inn is at present.
Mm-hmm.
I never did that. That was a fee basis mm-hmm. thing, and so I never rode. But at any rate, and then I went to the Moose Lodge in 1934.
Mm-hmm.
And Harold Fawcett, whose first name I had forgotten because I never called him anything but Spigot, though not to his face, was the counselor. I don't remember who the junior counselor was in that lodge. He didn't live in with us,
mm-hmm.
nor did Gardner. I mean, they came. They lived up in the crow's nest.
Oh, I see. The junior counselors didn't always stay in the cabin.
No. I think when I was counselor of the Beaver Lodge, we had a kind of an equal sharing. I don't even mm-hmm. remember the guy's name that I had it with, but mm-hmm. I think I was always considered the counselor.
Yeah, what year would you have been the counselor of the Beaver?
1940.
Yeah, I was the counselor of the Beaver in 1956.
Okay. Oh, you stand in good stead. Okay. But I don't. In my lodge in 1934, again Ralph Hurd,
mm-hmm.
Al Livingston, a fellow named Lewis, who was a kind of a strange kid, and Fawcett mothered him.
Mm-hmm.
God, I can see those guys. A fellow named Bell from Ohio, from around Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent all his time with the horses.
Oh, did he?
And he smelled all the time
of horses.
And every once in a while, he was not very big. We would pick him up and take him down the lake and bait.
Yeah, right.
There was a fellow named Roger Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
And a fellow named Tinsley.
Got a great memory.
There may have been others, and I mm-hmm. can't place them at the moment. That's most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a mixed bag, that lodge. I forget which sides we were on, but it was not a homogeneous lodge.
I see. Yeah.
I can't think of anything except the captains were Hicks Lawrence. Dick Bittenbender had been the captain the year before that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want the captains? I can remember.
Yes, any of your captains, they're great. You know, I think they have been listed in other places,
yeah,
but
I gave
it's
them
interesting.
Some of the only ones I can remember were my first year, Harry Davis
and
a fellow named Jim Alexander.
Yes, I guess that's the Alexander family that still goes up there.
Mm-hmm. And Davis was named Patrick Henry Davis, and he was a great athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to the boys' school for a year. He and Bill Hillis used to play football for him down there. I don't remember who were the captains in 1930. But I came back in 1936 primarily because I signed up the Mesereau boys, and Raymond gave me $25 each for that, and,
mm-hmm.
and then I paid $175 to be a master camper.
Yeah.
And again, to my surprise, they made me a captain that year. I really mm-hmm. don't know why, because my record didn't seem to bear it out.
Well, yeah, you
put
it up there.
But at any rate, I would have matured a bit, and so Tom DeBow was my opponent on that, and I'm happy to say we won the race.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked mostly in the boating department, the sailing department.
That time.
But we were permitted to do things like running the track meets.
Mm-hmm.
Because by that time I was running at Andover, and I could win a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I lived up in the crow's nest. And I think Ernie Christner may have been the counselor in that thing. He mm-hmm. was a diver at Yale, mm-hmm. and he ran the boating department.
I see.
And in that lodge were Clint Mesereau, Ralph Hurd, Al Livingston, Jim Edwards. Philly Rose, who only went there 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And I've struck out on that one.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
I can't think who they were. I didn't go back in 37 because my father's business went under that summer.
Mm-hmm.
38, I got invited out to Michigan after I graduated from Andover, so I went there. 39, I worked for the government. And in 1940, just before I was going back to work for the government, Raymond called me up and told me that Kingsley Noble, the sailing counselor, couldn't get there, and would I do it, which I did. And I think that year, in 1941, were the two happiest summers I ever spent in my life.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm thinking very seriously of having my ashes spread on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
which
great place.
Well, that's what I think about it. My brother never went back after 36. I don't remember why, but he went to Europe one of those summers, 37, I guess, and then he graduated in 38, went to architecture school. By that time, economics had caught up with the Murphys with a vengeance. Mm. So he wanted to flush. But if I had pictures of these years, I could identify a lot of them. The guys in my first year up there, the guys I took the days off with were Johnny Marble.
Oh, yes.
And Dick Bittenbender.
Well known. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bill Bittenbender was a great friend of my brother's, and I can't remember whether he was there in 1940 or not. Johnny Bittenbender was. Mm-hmm. He was still a camper. And in my second counselor year, 1941, my days off were with a fellow named Steve Whitney.
Oh, yes, he's come.
He later taught at Andover, and in fact, I had lunch with him a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, my goodness.
And a fellow named Curtis Stocking, who taught tennis, and he was a big blowhard.
Was he?
but different.
Yeah.
And Steve Whitney had a car, so we could always get out of camp.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know whether this kind of a... Anytime you want to shut it off and let me tell the story...
No, I'm sorry. Counselor stories. I was a counselor up there, and...
Well, George Frank taught me a great lesson.
Uh-huh.
I had no plans to take days off. I think it was my first year, and I needed every buck I could get out of. I think I got paid $125
uh-huh.
for the first summer and $150 for the second. I needed every nickel I could lay my hand on. And George one time came up behind me and he said, "I see you didn't take your last 2 days off." And I told him no, I was trying to save some money. And he said to me something I've never forgotten. He said, "Get out of the camp." He said, "The kids need to be rid of you for a day. You're living with them 7 days a week and they need that. And you need it." And he said, "If you want to save money, get the cook to pack you up for lunch, take one of the canoes, go up the lake and vegetate on the beach."
Yeah.
I always thought it was a great piece of advice.
Yeah. George had that feeling.
Yeah.
He was a great man.
I worked really more for George than I did for Raymond. He was a better businessman than Raymond. You could kind of deal with him a little better. If you needed things, George was more likely to tell you to go ahead and buy it than Raymond was.
That's right.
Raymond didn't like to spend money.
Right.
In 1942, I got a commission from the Navy, but no orders to active duty in June of 42. Raymond called me up in July and said they were having trouble in the camp because they had 17 and 18-year-old counselors that didn't seem to have a very good handle on the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Cleve Corey needed somebody to bring him up from the hospital to what was his family's place at the inn. And they would pay my way, would I come up on a week-to-week basis.
Hmm.
Which I did.
Great.
And taught sailing, and I took over the Lynx Lodge. And I can't tell you who was in that lodge. Except a fellow named Wilmot Whitney. Irving Boughton may have been. Irving Boughton was in the Moose Lodge when I had it.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, I do better with Mike contemporaries than I did with who was in the lodge.
Mm-hmm. Well, this would be 1943 now?
This would be 42.
42,
yeah.
Okay.
And then about the second week, I got my orders to report to New York for duty.
Mm-hmm.
So I thumbed my way to Boston and took the train down.
Right.
Reported in. I went back to camp once in 1943 on leave for a week. We were just about to go overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And we were fitting out in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and I came up to camp and spent almost the entire week with Bateman and a man named Evans, whose son was a friend of mine.
What was your earliest memory of Bates?
He came to camp in 1933.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the Beaver Lodge, he was in the Moose Lodge. And he was one of the first of the, what I called, older men.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose, well, I know how old he was. Because he was born, I think, in 1898 or 99 or 97. So what would he have been, 30-something years old? I thought of him as an old man because most of our counselors were young.
Right.
Almost all of them came out of Ohio State and Yale and Ohio University. Most of that, and a few out of Harvard. I really didn't know Bates well in that year, and the next year I probably didn't see a lot of him, but 36 I saw a lot of Bates.
Was he in trips by that time?
Yes, he was in trips by that time. And by 1940, he and I were just the closest of buddies, and we went on trips together and up to the farmer's wife about three or four nights a week. I even visited him once during the war on my way home from the Pacific. Stopped in Columbus for a weekend. And we maintained that friendship up until his death. We kept up with it. And
great.
When I went back in the 50s with my family, where Bates was in constant attendance. I loved the guy. He was a great poet.
I got a tape of his. Was able to interview him. I've done about 20.
And you got one of his?
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting one. Well, I love Bates. He just... but Bates could be very critical of the management of the camp. He particularly disliked Burtis. And what was the old fellow named it? You named him there. Davy Bryant.
Oh, yeah, Davy Bryant.
And you could get mad at Burtis. You could get fed up with him. He was, I think he was retarded myself. And I suspect that there were people who thought he was a homosexual, but I had no evidence of
who I never saw any of that.
No, and I don't think he was. Mm-hmm. But when he would talk to you, he was always hitting you.
Right.
Right in the chest. So I was standing there, and I'm reading to her, now, Dad, you, this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But
younger kids, I think he tried to make them feel at home in camp.
Yeah, I don't know what today they'd have been in trouble over him, although I don't think he was... homosexual.
Right.
But to me, he represented what was beginning to happen in the camp, is that there were more and more men taken up to the camp who would come for the summer, provide an automobile to drive kids up in, work in the store, work in the shop, answer the phone, and not be paid anything.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I think they became somewhat more pervasive than they should have been. Burtis didn't get involved in the camp itself, but there was a man named Prestel there at that time.
Yeah.
Who to me was a pain in the neck because his son was in my lodge, and he didn't like the way I handled discipline.
Oh, is that right?
But then he went to Raymond, which I didn't appreciate, and happily for me, Raymond backed me up. But I didn't like that kind of thing.
I had one situation like that too, so I know exactly what you mean.
Well, you're going to have them, I think. You take eight kids in a lodge, and there's somebody in this kind.
One dad is in there in the camp.
Yeah.
That was my problem too.
Well, it was the same. He only stayed there a month, I think, but I didn't like him.
Prestel was there my first year in dramatics.
Prestel was?
Yeah, I'm 44.
Joe.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. That's another person altogether.
Okay.
The Joe Prestel that I was told about came back visiting, but he was a friend of Peter Strong, who was from New Jersey and knew Prestel. But that's right. No, he wasn't. He wasn't there in 44. That's right. But I know who you mean.
Yeah. My great buddies in the camp were Bill Bloodgood. He and I were close friends. And in the Beaver Lodge, Van Ingen and Kerr. And in my first 2 years, I don't know who, but Bart Benedict was a pretty good friend of mine. He lives out in Oakland, California. But my recollections of those early days is not terribly comprehensive.
You mentioned you did have contact with Ross Miller.
Yeah, but not until later.
Not until later.
Yeah, I knew him when he first came to camp, and I knew Dick when he first came. But Ross Miller Sr. I had much more contact with.
Okay.
Because he was big on mountain climbing, and we too were good friends, close friends. But he was not loved by everybody.
Right.
And some of the women around the camp were quite critical of him. They said he was, I never saw this side of him, so I never knew it. But he reputedly had a bad temper. Surprising for a minister, I suppose. But I didn't see that of him, and I loved the guy. He was a good guy. And
yeah, he continued going up there until around 64, I believe, when he died.
Yeah, I don't remember what year he did, but I saw something of Mrs. Miller later on. And
yes.
She lived here in Arkin. The other minister we had in the camp in those days was Sidney Sweet.
Yes.
Who was the rector of the chancery in Episcopal Church in St. Louis, I think.
Yes.
And he was a lovely man. And his sons, Sid and Ed, were counselors when I was there. Sid, as far as I know, was still living. But Ed died in the 30s. I don't remember what up, but...
Well, what is your recollection? For instance, you had the church service in the morning, and then did you have a Vespers in the evening, or how did that work?
Well, we had the church service down the point, underneath the council fireplace there on mm-hmm. the lake, where
right.
they had a cairn and a birch cross.
Mm-hmm.
And we Catholics went to Wilton or to Rumford to camp mm-hmm. and or to service, and usually Bates drove us over there. There mm-hmm. weren't many Catholics in the camp, and I don't remember who they were.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm Forbes, I think, was in those early days, and not later. I don't really remember, but I remember going over there, and I think Bates drove us most of the time, and mm-hmm. he used to even go to the service.
Mm-hmm.
So we were exempted from that morning service, but then we had Bass Rock in the evening,
mm-hmm.
and I am very sentimental about that. That, mm-hmm. that was a great service, and we took all the boats in the camp, and boats came from all over the lake, and they surrounded Bass Rock, and mm-hmm. we had a quartet, G.R. Frank, and I think Mr. Myers, the father yeah. of Al and Bill.
Raymond, probably.
Raymond, well, that's right, he did. And I've forgotten who the fourth man was. They were very, very good.
Art Kiefer took that role when he came later in the mid-30s.
Well, how long did the Bass Rock things last?
Well, they lasted for a year or two after I started, so I think around 45 okay. or 46.
Well, they had just opened up the park in the early 40s,
mm-hmm.
and the people who came there were very, very nice about it and respectful.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, most of them came down and sat on the beach where they could hear the music.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt if they could hear the preaching, but well, mm-hmm. it wasn't very far, and a voice carries well.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember those days with great
affection. That was a great evening.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that, too.
I think did more for my feelings of religiosity than the Catholic Church did in those times, although I'm a Catholic today.
Sure.
But
were there any other observations you mentioned that your brother you thought was a bit more of a prankster than you were? Since he's not here to tell his stories,
well,
maybe you could share a few about your brother.
The business of the car auction was engineered by my brother, and I think Grant Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in the camp was invited after breakfast to report out to the athletic field. And there were a couple of cars. It was I can remember a Model A Ford Roadster. And these guys had them driving around with the wheels tied down, just driving around in a circle with nobody in them. Now, 10 years later, that would have been anathema.
I imagine George or Raymond were beside themselves.
Well, I don't know what they were, but anyway, everybody took it in good nature. My brother was the author of that one. But part of the change of the camp was that when they had the Duke of Zanzibar or Abyssinia,
mm-hmm.
whoever was the Duke, and the first one was this guy who was the counselor in the Pine Tree Lodge, and his name I forget. But he became a bishop in the Episcopal Church in New York.
I see.
And he was a wild man. And he'd get up in the middle of the night and
then yeah.
pull on these pranks. Later on, that we don't keep the kids up at night.
Mm-hmm.
None of that. We didn't do anything after that. Even the snipe hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Did they have a snipe hunt?
Yes, they did have that.
That was brought back a little bit, so you didn't have the kids up and, you know, not getting to bed at taps.
Mm-hmm.
But as the pranks age, the
mm-hmm.
counselors age, and they had
yeah.
more and more, and I don't mean to insult you, but more
yeah.
and more of the school teachers.
Yeah.
And the problem of the kind of thing that Fawcett presented us,
mm-hmm.
where we called him Mister.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't go out and do what we did. He didn't go out and
yeah.
play baseball. He didn't go mountain climbing. He's a good man. I don't mean we disliked him.
Right.
But there was a gap between us.
Yeah,
I never thought of having a kid in my lodge call me Mister.
No, I didn't use that.
But I was 20, 22, 21, 22.
Yeah, when you were that age, I was
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and I was as physically rugged as they were.
Mm-hmm.
Could do whatever they did.
Sure. Took your own kids up the mountain and
yeah.
so forth.
And when they went out on an overnight or something like that,
you
I went with them.
Sure.
Fawcett didn't.
Well, they're doing that now again.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I guess that kind of exhaust my impression of the place.
Yeah, probably just different people that we might not have touched on. For instance, now I guess Emma Briggs and Lawrence were not in the kitchen when you were a camper,
yes,
were they?
Yes, they were. They succeeded a couple named Maud and Bert Carlson.
Well, that'd be interesting. Yeah.
And they were the cooks in 1929 when I first went there, and I think again in 1930. I don't think they were related to the Briggs. The Carlsons had a place up on a little pond up near Rangeley somewhere, or Strong, or one of those towns. But the Carlsons came to work in the wintertime at the Englewood School for Boys.
I see.
So that I knew them well. I mean, I saw them really all year long. And they were a couple of real Yankees, as were Emma and Lawrence. But Emma and Lawrence continued on, so they must have been there almost every year I was there.
Good.
I think they came in with Burton Moore, maybe my second year, but I wouldn't know.
So that early, I know Lawrence was away for the Second World War for a year or two, but then he came back. And Emma, of course, I had a birthday up there on the 13th of July, and Emma always baked a beautiful cake for me. Yeah.
Well, she was a lovely person, and she was devoted to my brother. I can't remember what the connection was. She loved him. But you asked about my brother. I can't remember some of the pranks he pulled. The only one I remember that would have gotten him in trouble if had ever been disclosed. But Ma Frank was a militant anti-liquor person.
I see.
Absolutely. You couldn't even mention beer in the running the plays. And my brother and this fellow, Strong, one time put an empty beer can by her chair in the mess in the dining hall. And she came in and pulled the chair back and knocked the can over. Because she would sit down. She was getting frail in those years. And all you could hear above the prayer was, George, it's beer. It's beer. And absolute panic. And of course, she blamed everybody in the camp except my brother. But she thought he was a great guy.
Those are interesting observations. Any other references you have to Ma Frank over the years?
No. She was a great force in the camp. And I did help build that cabin.
Oh, did you?
Well, when I say help, it was a kind of camp effort. So I was up on the roof driving nails when 13, I guess. I don't know when the cabin was built. Maybe 34 or 36, I don't remember which. But the kids really
helped
build that. Yeah. And then she'd sit on that porch right opposite the office.
Right.
But I used to like to drop in and Mom, she'd fix them up. Seam of a pants or,
sure.
or a shirt or something like that, and we talked about things. I was devoted to Ma. She's a lovely person. Flossie Frank, however, was a horse of a different color. I like Flossie, but she got involved in dietetics, and we always used to have corn outings where we'd go up to that beach just a little bit beyond Bass Rock.
Oh, yeah.
And they had those big copper kettles, and they'd have a corn roast. She got the idea that corn was indigestible for children.
Really?
So the whole corn thing stopped.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody understood why. This used to burn Bateman up.
So she, I understand, at least at some point or other, spent most of her time at the inn.
Oh, yes. Didn't
she?
But as a dietitian,
but she
had
was
to do with the
whole camp.
No, she was very rarely at the camp.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember whether she sat at the head table with them or not. She may have. Franny did when she married Raymond.
Yes.
And Ma. And I'm not sure that Mrs. Miller didn't sit there.
I think she did during the 40s.
Yeah.
She was there, too. Well, what about Franny? Do you have any memories of Franny?
No, but I had known her. She'd been in charge of girls' affairs at the Presbyterian Church in Englewood.
I see.
That's where Raymond met her, I guess.
I see.
And I can't remember when they married. Sometime probably around 33 or 32. they adopted a baby and it didn't work out well, and then the parents came and took the child back, and it was a tragedy for them. And then they had Betty, and I guess that was about, I'm guessing, 36 or something. I always liked Franny. She was a very nice woman.
Now, she certainly took her job to heart and did a lot of the things that other people
weren't very eager to do. Because my Frank, in my first years, and then Franny took this over, particularly in the Eagle and Falcon Lodges, where kids would wet their beds, for instance, and the word would just be fed up to them, and she'd go into breakfast and change the bedding and so forth, so the kid would save some embarrassment.
Do you remember Campbell Scarlett? What about Cam Scarlett? Is your memory?
Well, he was a horse of a different color, but he was a wonderful counselor to the Eagle Lodge, because they were very well disciplined without being over disciplined. But Cam always was dressed in street clothes. I mean, about the way I am now, he was short of a tie, and. I don't remember. He edited the wigwam.
Yeah.
I don't know that he was really involved in any of the activities in the camp at all.
He wasn't when I knew him. He was still in the Eagle Lodge when I first started going there. I'd see him out rowing the boat. That's about the thing.
His father was a judge in the Court of Common Pleas in Cleveland, I think.
And Columbus.
Columbus, okay.
Yeah.
And I knew Judge Scarlett. And then Wombaugh was
adopted.
I don't remember what, not by Cam, because he never married.
No, it was the judge. They were very close friends of the Wombaughs, and they were killed, the mother and dad.
Oh, really? Now, you know
and
more
the
about
whole
that
estate
than I did.
Was managed by the Scarletts.
I always used to go around a pair of cut-off dungarees with just frilly bottoms.
They were very popular right now.
Yeah, well, a pair of moccasins and a rope belt.
Right.
And I was walking past the office one day, and there was a mother of a kid that came from somewhere up in Skowhegan, I think, big woman. And Campbell Scarlett had preceded me down there. I heard the woman eyeing him, then looked at me and said, "Well, I'm glad to know there's one he-man." And it was strictly comparative. I mean, more of a he-man than anybody else was. Oh, that thing.
There was a fellow named Kurtz that I interviewed.
Kurtz.
K-U-R-T-Z. You remember him at all?
No, I don't.
He had some a little more dramatic memories of Cam, and I just didn't know. I just wondered, you know, about him too, but I can't even think of his first name, but he was from Bexley. And
I remember that when my lodge, for instance, would go on some kind of an outing where I didn't go with them, I always would like to go and eat with the Eagles, because it was the best disciplined table in the place.
Yeah, right.
I mean, those kids said please, and they passed stuff, and would you like to have some bread? Cam really ran a taut ship, but he was good at it. And I enjoyed him. I liked him. He was a button collector.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know why I remember that, but I do.
Yeah, well, his mother came up and stayed at the inn, and...
yes, I remember Mrs. Scarlett.
Yeah, he was from Bexley, and that's why I happened... apparently did... No, I'm thinking he didn't turn out as well as he might have in his later years. He had his problems.
A guy named Kent Morris who preceded him in the Eagle Lodge, and he reputedly was a homosexual. I don't know whether he got into trouble up there with any of the boys, but he had a widespread reputation for that later on. I was unaware of it as a camper there. I remember him well enough, but I never saw that. As I say, Burtis probably would have been accused of that, although I'm sure he wasn't.
No.
I think he just was a strange man.
No, well, as you know, as the years went by, there were a few that came out of the closet.
Well, I suppose that's going to happen when you get a thing.
But
like that.
Not these people we're talking about, but Webby Davis, for instance, who came up later.
Yeah, I remember that name. But
yeah, he also had the Eagle Lodge for a while, and he was a great admirer of Cam.
Yeah.
And so you know, there were some of those too, naturally, but it didn't have any effect.
Cam always wore a
hat.
Tyrolean hat, I think. And he was very formal for a place like Kewaunee.
Yeah, he must have had a certain image that he wanted, you know.
Well, if he did, he maintained it. I never saw a Cam in a pair of shorts in my life.
No, I don't think I did either. What about Pop Knoll? Was he active in your
era? No, I remember that name, and he may have been there last year I was there.
But that's about, I was wondering.
But I don't remember him other than the name.
Now, he was our senior counselor in the Crow's Nest, and was a great guy, and continued.
Well, how old were you when you went there first?
13.
Okay, so.
And I was 14 up there.
So you were 11 years younger than I am.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there are some other things that we haven't covered. For instance, what about Piercy, Noel Piercy?
I knew Noel.
He was up there.
He ran the shop and did leather work and metal work primarily. And he was always Mr. We never called him. I think when I went back as a counselor, I took to calling him Noel.
Uh-huh.
But as a camper, I always called him Mr.
Did you?
Uh-huh. And Bob Studebaker came in, I don't remember what year he was there, and he was the chief's son-in-law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know Bob very well. I mean, I knew him, but I didn't know him well, because he didn't live in the camp, as I recall.
Is that right? Yeah. That's interesting. He came, apparently did have some suggestions on management. Maybe he even dreamed up the chief. Would that have been possible, the coming of the chief?
Oh, no, because that was that, long before,
him.
Before he came there.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a guy named Hawks who was the shop man, I think, when I first was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him, but I don't remember anything about him particularly.
Mm-hmm.
Big man with a big voice.
Mm-hmm.
The coming of the chief was in existence when I first went there.
When you first went there,
yeah.
Okay.
And it was always Raymond who called him
and
Chief Marshall who did it.
Fred Heimberger, does that?
Oh, I have a great devotion to him. He taught me to swim.
Oh, yeah?
And ran the water department the first 3 years I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And later, when I came back and rented that house, the Heimbergers were still there, not really associated with the camp. They had a cabin, I think, up there. And he and Betty were just marvelous to us. And
mm-hmm.
They took a great shine to my son, who was then about 5 or 6, and would take him for a day, for instance. Mm-hmm. I think he was a great man, Fred. He really was. I wish. And of course, when I first went there, he was Mister to me. But
mm-hmm.
when I was a counselor, he was Fred, and Betty, his wife, and I loved the two of them. They were just a part of the flavor of Kewaunee.
I used to see him, you know. Even, I guess, in the 50s, after he built his own place up there on Center Hill.
Yeah.
And of course, he was vice president of Ohio State.
Yeah.
Then. Yeah, he was a broad, I imagine, had a broad
background.
Remind me
to tell you a story he told me about that when we get off the tape. Not that it lacks any propriety, but it has nothing to do with this.
It has nothing to do with the camp. Okay. Well, are there any other thoughts about Raymond that maybe you haven't mentioned that would be of interest? You, of course, went over the list here looking at the various campers as we went along, and the Benuas, of course, you mentioned.
I knew all of the Benuas, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's starting, and the George Tittman, of course, he came in 26 to 35 in athletics.
He was about 37 at Harvard.
Uh-huh.
He was older than my brother, but they were great friends, and Tittman was a great athlete. Mm-hmm. And as I say, I understand he was murdered. He was a Episcopalian priest or something out in St. Louis.
Out in St. Louis, and he was murdered there.
Yeah, that's what I'm told. I don't know where it was.
Now, William Weld, you mentioned
him. Oh, yeah, and he was a great friend of my brother's, and he was older than Whit.
Mm-hmm. I have him down here in the camp store, mail, and then athletics, tennis, Andover Academy.
Yeah. One day he and I were about to go out in a boat to do something or other, and Womble was up on the little
mm-hmm.
dock.
Mm-hmm.
And he was stooped down looking into the water, and Bill said to me, just as I was about to stroke on the oar, he said, "Wait a minute." And he got out of the boat, walked up and out to the dock, just gave Womble a kick in the rear end into the water. And then he just walked right back, got in the boat.
He couldn't pass up that opportunity.
He was a great guy. I lost track of him. I think he went to Greece or something, and I don't know what's on. I'm quite sure he's not living anymore.
Well, gosh, I really appreciate this opportunity.
Remember that the counselors in my younger days were almost all college guys. Always a couple of Yaleys up there. The Johnson brothers. Yeah. Howie Johnson was the swimming captain at Yale in my senior year at Yale. And he and I were counselors there in 1940 and 41.
Mm-hmm.
And that year, Yale had the national swimming championship. Howie was a great swimmer.
Yeah.
And his brother Bob had gone to Ohio State and swam.
Mm-hmm.
They ran the water department.
Well, that's a great team.
Yeah, and it was a great team. They were great guys. But that's what it was, you see, and Dick Bittenbender and Johnny Marble, and I include myself because I was that age.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
But I think it gave the camp a certain degree of vitality.
Oh, yes.
That the Fawcett type of counselor lacked.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I think you had to have college.
I'm not flattering you, but
I was up there as a college guy too. You see, originally went into foreign trade.
Yeah.
And
you were talking about Elliot Kimberly.
Elliot Kimberly, that's right.
I remember him, and I could identify him. If you showed me a picture of the camp when he was there, I could quickly spot him. And I probably was one of those ones I missed when I was trying to identify him before.
A metal worker. He was apparently up in the shop.
He could have been. I don't remember that.
Right. Well, we were also talking about two or three others here, like Joe Shepherd in athletics and trips. I don't know whether there's anything else you wanted to add. Or George Kitteridge.
Kitteridge, Kitty, they call him. He worked up in the kitchen, didn't he?
He may have at times, but I have him down here in dramatics, and from the Cranbrook School.
That's what my
school.
Brother did, was dramatic.
Uh-huh. Cranbrook School in Birmingham, Michigan.
Michigan.
Then you say William Altman.
He was ahead of the athletic department.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother was a great pal of Liz, his wife.
Uh-huh.
But he was my bête noir, and I'm afraid and I'm ashamed to say that I really was the troublemaker. And I was a poor sport, and I didn't like athletics, but I was reasonably good at them, which frustrated the hell out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he would go out with a baseball bat and a ball, and me, all by myself, out in the athletic field, hit me flies.
Mm-hmm.
And I could catch nearly anything if I get my hands on him, but I wouldn't hold on to anything he hit me. And then I'd throw the ball, so he'd have to chase it. I mean, with that kind of I hated him.
Yeah.
And I Bateman kind of backed me up. He thought that Altman had a touch of the cruel.
Pushing you too far.
But at any rate, he was probably right and I was wrong. But it didn't improve the situation.
No. I bet he wanted to help you, to get you to enjoy it, but that wasn't the way to do it.
Well, his methods, if that
poor.
Was his aim, were a poor one. There probably was another way around it.
Mm-hmm.
But he was right, and I was wrong. But I disliked him thoroughly. And I don't know when he's. I don't think he was there in 36, although he may have been. Although by that time I was a master camper, and I was no longer a problem.
Yeah.
And I got to like baseball, and I go on the track meets and did a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was no problem.
Yeah, I have him marked as 27 through 36, so he was a long time.
Four or 5 years I was there in as a camper.
I know you had mentioned Leslie Arps earlier.
Well, I really didn't know Les Arps.
Yeah.
I know he was.
Yeah, 27 to 30.
He was a rather good-looking man, and he did the horses. I think Rafe Marshall did some of the horses, too.
Yes. Yes, he did.
He also ran the range, as did Howell Wendell.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I don't know whether I knew that or not, but that, yeah. Now, I have some other names, like, what about Jack Hazelhurst? Does that name mean anything,
yeah.
too?
Oh, yeah, he was the magician.
Uh-huh.
Great big fella.
Uh-huh.
I can see him, and I can see him in the picture. Probably stood dead center. He's the biggest counselor in the camp.
Yeah.
But I don't remember anything about him personally.
He's down here as dramatics.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't there many years, was he?
He was there 25 through 33.
Oh, was he? Was he there in 33?
Mm-hmm.
So then he was there 3 years. Yeah, I remember.
Uh-huh. And of course, you mentioned Hawk, 25 through 27.
Wait a minute, 27 through or 37?
I have just 27. Is that
I remember Hawks, and I wasn't there in 27.
Okay.
I think I pulled that name out of the hat.
So you weren't there. Yeah, okay, I've got to check that out.
It must have been in the early 30s because I don't remember Hawks.
Okay.
But Bob Studebaker took over the shop, and he had Noel Pierce rented when I was, I don't remember what year.
So if you came in 29 and you knew him, then...
Well, yes, I remember him.
So, you know, you remember him. So he maybe was there in 25, but he must have continued.
Because I picked that name out of the air.
Yes, you had mentioned it earlier. I remember you doing that. Well, that's helpful. And then there's a Roland Robinson. I guess he was only there 25 to 28. So
I don't remember him.
We'll forget that.
My brother would have, but I don't remember.
Yeah, well, there is one person here called Aunt Nell, the cook.
She was not there when I was there. I remember the name because my brother used to talk about her.
Uh-huh, okay.
I don't remember whether she was in the dining room or whether she was a nurse, but I think she was a cook.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember her picture from the old catalog.
Mm-hmm.
Those catalogs were great. They came out every year, and they were like a yearbook.
Yeah, that's right. Well done.
And I haven't got any of them left.
that's sad, although we have them. So, you know, I think most of them I have a lot of them in my house.
There are some gaps in those big camp pictures, though, up there, because when I gave them 36, I don't think they had them.
Yeah,
or
good.
Or 29, rather.
Right, the big camp pictures.
And those big things with the scores, told me they got burned up.
I'm sad to say that when they redid the rec hall, they took them all down this year, and I want to investigate where those are. I'm going back up there.
A lot of them went to the dump.
Oh, boy. I hope. What about Gardner Defoe, Dr. Defoe? Was he active with you?
He may have been a minister to me, but I don't remember him as a person. His son runs a...
he did.
I went up down the Allegash about 6 or 7 years ago.
With him? Yeah.
Down with a guy from over in the middle of the state somewhere.
Yeah. Gardner, I understand, just a year or two ago gave that up. I knew Gardner. I'd see him up at the inn.
Yeah.
And
that was the son, wasn't it?
I'm referring to Gardner,
the doctor,
the son.
Yeah.
But that.
Remember the other thing from Dixfield was the guys that came to camp about twice a summer to cut your hair.
Oh yes, that's
an
interesting.
They put the bowls on your head and just shave it around because you look like hell.
Yeah, that was a famous. That was always a interesting day. What about this guy Joseph Dewey? Does that ring any bell? He was in sailing, woodwork, Columbus Academy.
Dewey.
But that's another one.
It's just vague. I can't say as I do remember.
Uh-huh. And have we mentioned or talked about Grant Armstrong?
Yes. He was a great friend of my brother's.
Uh-huh.
And Army was a hell of a nice guy. I don't remember what he did in the camp, but he was a great fellow.
Mm-hmm. Now, here I do have Whitney Murphy here now, 29, 31 through 36.
It was 26 through 36.
It wasn't 26 through 36.
Yeah. And he went there straight. He didn't miss a year.
Oh, boy, I'm glad.
I don't think he went the whole of 1926, but he went...
What, 26?
He went all the rest of them. And
very
he wound
good.
Up as counselor of the Pine Tree Lodge in 1936.
What was a counselor of the Pine Tree in 36? What were the areas you recall that he excelled in? Was there any particular area that he enjoyed?
He did dramatics.
He was dramatic.
Primarily. And I think he helped out in athletics, but I'm not sure... What else he did?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's helpful.
He was a. Now I shouldn't. This isn't modest, but he was a very popular guy.
Uh huh.
He had a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
He added a lot to the camp.
Well, both you and his name have come up in discussing camp with a number of people.
If you go back far enough. Like the Myers family, I think the Murphy family was a little bit of a dynasty for that short period.
Sure. Well, that's what made the camp, I think. We're having young men come back who enjoyed it and who made a contribution. Now, there are a number of people, as I look down through here, as you say, a lot of this is history. A lot of Benuas
And
well, Louis was older than I was. He was probably
he?
4 or 5 years older. And Tom and the older, there was another brother.
Richard Banua, 32, 37.
I can't remember which was which.
Mm-hmm. Ralph Lucas.
Oh, yeah. He was known as Flutie.
Uh-huh.
And I think he worked in the rec hall and worked in the nature department.
I see. Uh-huh.
He was a good guy.
Uh-huh.
He became a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
He was in the crow's nest when I was there.
Ah, was he? Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And Edgar Lumper?
Yeah, uh-huh. He was in the Beaver Lodge with me.
Uh-huh.
He was the camp fatty. Very nice fellow. Went to Princeton. And I don't know what he did later in life.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I think we really covered the areas well. I have this Robert Bohannon. I don't think his name has come
Bob
up.
Bohannon,
so,
but I don't remember him very well. Where did he come from?
He came from the west, Columbus.
Okay, I couldn't remember.
And he was in the range, according to here, and he went to Iowa State.
Yeah.
And then, as you said, there's David C. Bryant, 39 to 43.
The name of Deal doesn't appear in there, does it?
William Deal.
Bill Deal.
Yes, very early.
Yeah. And he was there my first couple of years, I guess, maybe even 1933. And he was a tremendous guy. I think he was in the swimming department.
Yes,
but he was, relatively speaking, a lot older than I was.
Was he? Uh-huh.
Deal and Ford were great pals.
And I don't know, I guess you mentioned Glenn Goodwin. He was in photography and dramatics.
Yeah, yeah. He was not a very popular guy, as I recall, in camp. And then, of course, his death in the war created a tragedy for his family. That it was a,
uh-huh. Yeah, there's a Charles Lamborg, a Lamborn, L-A-M-B-O-R-N.
No, I can't place that name.
So, yeah, I think we're really, you've given us some invaluable insights, Reed. Carl, of course, Dr. Carl Elmore.
Well, I knew him from Englewood, because mm-hmm. he was the minister of that Presbyterian church, and he was just one of the world's great people.
I was impressed with his sermons. The thing that I thought was so impressed is that he could give a talk that would hold the attention of a 6 or 7 year old, and their parents were sitting on the edge of their seat at the same time.
Oh, he had a light touch.
I went
to the boys' school, and have you ever been in England? The Presbyterian church was cheek by jowl with the old boys' school.
I see.
It was their gym, and the Boy Scouts met there, and I was a scout very briefly, and my brother for a longer time. And one time my father went to Mr. Elmore, and he said, I'd like to make a contribution to your church.
Hmm.
And Mr. Elmore said, well, Mr. Murphy, you go to think. Cecilia, what he said, I know when I think of what your church does for my boys.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that kind of an atmosphere.
Oh, great.
Elmore was one of the world's great men.
Mm-hmm.
Sidney Sweet was like that,
mm-hmm.
his father.
Mm-hmm.
So was young Sid, but mm-hmm. the old man was the minister.
Well, I think that I was impressed with that sort of thing for some reason as a kid, you know, too, the idea that you had that evidence at that camp. A lot of camps, I don't think, had that side to them.
Yeah.
You know, you want to have all the fun and you want to be able to be a teenager or whatever, but you have a certain quality there that I know I appreciated.
Well, you know, every once in a while, and I suppose you do this too, you get to think of the people who influenced your life.
Right.
Life, rather. And when I look back on that thing and I think mm-hmm. of those ministers like Mr. Elmore to a lesser degree because it's all less of them,
mm-hmm.
but Mr. Sweet,
mm-hmm.
Dean Miller, Van Eeks, they were great influences in my life.
Sure.
They might not have been flattered by that statement.
Well,
sure. But they were, and I think a lot of my, to the extent that I am a religious person, I'm not terribly so, a lot of it stems back from that. And I can remember those Bass Rock services. I loved going to them. I mean,
yeah.
even as a kid.
Yeah.
I didn't, wasn't always too attentive, and I did get caught for fishing one time. I would have been all right if I hadn't caught something.
I see.
Raymond didn't think much of that.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, you know, the fun thing about discussing these things is because others have had similar experiences in certain areas, because, I mean, you're dealing with certain personalities, whether you're talking about Raymond or you're talking about George or whatever, and I think that's what really binds a lot of the men who have been.
I knew Raymond better, and I knew him longer than I did George, but George, one of his departments was the sailing department, so
right.
I answered to him more than I did to Raymond as a counselor. And had a very high regard for George. I thought he was a tremendous guy. And I can't remember whether I saw George. I came home from the war, from the Pacific, in December of 45, or January of 46, when I left my last ship. And I stopped in Columbus, visited with the Batemans for a weekend.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there had been a friend of his who had been in my PT squadron, and we saw him. And I think I saw George and the Heimbergers and two or three others that were. But those men left an indelible impression on me, and I'm very grateful to them.
Right. I
think most of the people who influenced my life were teachers and those Kiwanis counselors.
Yeah, I guess
and
I'd have to say
father,
that. And your father. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, you're not here to get a lesson.
No. I feel very similar.
Yeah.
That's why I guess I
was lucky in school. In the boys' school, I had good teachers.
Uh-huh.
I went to high school for a year, the public high school down in Englewood, and I had two or three great teachers down there for one year.
Uh-huh.
People I've never forgotten.
Uh-huh.
And I regret to say that I never took the trouble to write them and tell them.
Yeah.
I did it with several other people.
Mm-hmm.
I never did it with them.
Oh.
And I've always been, they're gone now.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Reed, for sitting down here with me this afternoon.
This is fun for me.
Yes, well, I'm glad, because it's fun for me, too.
I told you it was a fund of memories that I can't.
Right. Well, yes, she did. She said that, she knew that if it was possible to get together. I just running across one name here, and then maybe it's about time. Mike Pepe, ran his swimming team at Ohio State.
I knew that name, but he was never there when I was there.
Right.
My brother knew him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure that he was there when my brother was there, did he?
No, he comes, as I look at it here, he was there from 22 to 26.
Okay,
and
so
then
Whit might have known him, but I didn't know him.
And then 62. Yeah, he was a junior high school teacher. Before he went to Ohio State, and I can't tell you when he went.
He himself was a great swimmer at Ohio State, wasn't he?
He could have been.
I
imagine he was. Well, thank you again, Reed, for this interview, and I appreciate it very much.
Well, I appreciate what you're doing.